This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are also going to spend quite a lot of money, billions, training people to get skills that can be best used in our economy.
That's President Cyril Ramaphosa asking citizens to give the ANC another chance to fulfill Nelson Mandela's dream of prosperity for all South Africans. Details coming up also. Gunmen attacked a remote village in central Nigeria, killing 8 people. And the world is observing World Ministerial Hygiene Day today. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story in South Africa. 27 million people are registered to vote tomorrow in an election expected to be the tightest since the country became a democracy in 1994. Polls forecast the governing African National Congress, the ANC, could fall below 50% for the first time in 30 years, forcing it into a coalition government. Darren Taylor reports.
The African National Congress has campaigned heavily in rural areas in the run-up to the election, concentrating on its traditional support base. Many political experts doubt this will be enough for the former liberation movement to get the votes it needs to form a majority government for the seventh time. Even ANC insiders tell VOA the party's many failures over the past decade mean millions of South Africans have lost faith in the organization, admired globally for its heroic fight against apartheid. ANC officials have allegedly looted state-owned enterprises of billions of dollars. The party's economic policies have not created jobs, with an estimated 13 million employable people jobless. Almost half the population of 62 million lives in poverty, surviving on meager social grants, and crime is rampant. Yet the ANC insists it's going to easily win more than 50% of the votes on Wednesday. On Saturday, it held an election rally at a Soweto stadium. Thousands of supporters cheered. President Cyril Ramaphosa asked citizens to give the ANC another chance to fulfill Nelson Mandela's dream of prosperity for all South Africans.
We are also going to spend quite a lot of money, billions, training people to get skills that can be best used in our economy. Our objective is to create quality jobs. We want to build industries. We want to localize so that more and more products are made here in South Africa. As our economy grows, we will be able to have the capacity to provide more and more support and assistance to our people.
Political analyst Professor Lesiba Tefo says ANC leaders in private are panicking ahead of the vote.
There are many scholars, including academics and politicians, especially those who belong to the ruling party, who have come out to say the dream has been deferred. We have betrayed the expectations of our people. Where did it go wrong? They are the ones who are telling me. They are at each other's throat.
Former opposition leader Tony Leon is convinced the ANC will either be ousted or will have to form coalitions in 4 of South Africa's 9 provinces. This includes the heart of the country's economy, Gauteng, home to the big cities of Johannesburg and Pretoria. The party Leon once led, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, already governs the Western Cape region, including the city of Cape Town.
I'm of the view that the ANC will not get 50%, but how low they go, or how high they go in the 40s, will determine a lot of other things. If they get in the high 40s, it'll be status quo ante. They will form the next government. They've got a few smaller parties to join them, and it'll pretty much be business as usual. If they get in the low 40s or even mid 40s, it's going to be very hard for them to form a government except by calling in a big coalition partner. And then the crossroads choices rise, which way they go, populist EFF or more centrist DA, and what's going to be the response from those parties.
The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, says it'll partner with the ANC if the ruling party implements its radical policies. These include state control of banks and mines and expropriating private land to redistribute to the poor. Some analysts say these demands might persuade the ANC to join with a more pragmatic DA. DA leader John Steenhuisen told reporters in Johannesburg recently he's willing to consider a partnership with the ANC.
It might be the least worst option to prevent the radicals in government from taking over, and that we would be willing to look at a variety of options then in order to achieve a result that we believe would be beneficial for South Africa's future. I can't say to you an ANC-DA government's going to happen. I can't say to you it's going to be stable because I just don't know. I don't know what the ANC is going to look like after the election. I don't know whether they're going to become more radicalized as a result of the election or not.
Analysts say no matter what happens on Wednesday, the election will be the most definitive sign yet of the decline of the ANC. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Ahead of South Africa's elections tomorrow, journalist Tuso Kumalo has been out talking with voters in Johannesburg. Bobo Motlhabi, a longtime supporter of the African National Congress, says he is confident about what comes next.
As I'm going to cast my vote for the African National Congress, I know that the party that I belong to will deal with the issues of unemployment as it's one of the critical issues.
Kopolo Molukumi says he sees voting as important for the future.
We must get jobs. Everything we need, we must have it. So that's why we vote, so that we can have everything we need in our lives. Because now we are struggling with many things, but as long as we vote, everything will change.
For all the latest on the South African elections, be sure to check out voaafrica.com. Gunmen attacked a remote village in central Nigeria, killing 8 people and kidnapping about 150 more in the country's latest mass abduction. Local government authorities told the French news agency AFP that attackers on motorbikes stormed Kuchi village in Niger State on Friday night, where they killed 8 people and abducted about 150 villagers. Large kidnappings for ransom are common in Nigeria's northwest and central states, where heavily armed gangs known locally as bandits often target remote villages. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America, and for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The Southern African Science Service Center for Climate Change and Adaptive Land Management met in Namibia's capital on Thursday to discuss ways to blunt the impact of rising temperatures in the region. Vitalio Anguilla reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Global warming has surpassed the 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold agreed upon in the Paris Agreement, with January 2024 marking the hottest year on Earth since pre-industrial times. The rising temperatures, experts say, are making environmental disasters worse. Climate expert Francois Engelbrecht cautioned of tipping points if Southern African nations don't adapt to climate change and limit their carbon dioxide emissions by moving from coal and oil to cleaner energies like wind and solar.
In Botswana and Namibia, one of the biggest risks is that we are running the risk of completely losing the cattle industry. Because if the world should warm by 3 degrees Celsius globally, It means in Botswana and northeastern Namibia, the warming will be about 6 degrees Celsius. And that heat stress is so oppressive to the cattle that no cattle breed can survive that. All the cattle breeds will become unsustainable in terms of farming with them.
Tipping points are events where climate systems change in such a way that they can no longer be reversed. As an example, Engelberg said a prolonged drought in the Gauteng province of South Africa could lower water levels in dams and lead to shortages in the city of Johannesburg, making it inhospitable. Zambian geology scholar Kawawa Banda says research conducted under SASCAL shows groundwater supply in the Zambezi catchment area, shared by Botswana, Namibia and Zambia, could be another tipping point.
Now, in the TIPEC project, what we want to do is to understand the risks associated with these drought conditions. We want also to understand the risks associated with tipping points around the quality, as well as possible complete depletion of this resource, so that actions around adaptation and risks are better informed from a water management perspective.
TIPEC stands for Tipping Points Explained by Climate Change. It is funded by SASCAL. Jane Olwoh is the executive director of SASCAL, which includes Angola, Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, and Zambia. She says there is a need to integrate climate change into government policy, and information is a tool in sensitizing leaders to act on climate change by supporting renewable energy.
We also now use science, especially in green hydrogen, to support demonstration pilot projects. In that way, we are bringing in new technology, new know-how, and giving our countries capability to respond to these new subjects like green hydrogen and renewable energy.
Namibia's green energy ambitions involve the production of hydrogen and ammonia for foreign markets using solar and wind energy, some of which will be sent back into the electrical grid. A clean source of energy, experts say, can replace oil, coal, and gas in the near future. In the Southern Hemisphere, Botswana, Namibia, and Zambia are hit hardest by global warming, with SASCAL research showing a 6% increase in the second half of the 21st century if nothing is done about it now. Vitalio Angula, Windhoek, Namibia.
Life expectancy in Europe has returned to the level it reached before the 2020 coronavirus pandemic, while the U.S. is still trying to regain lost ground. Overall, new numbers show life expectancy has increased in most parts of the world, with Eastern Sub-Saharan Africa showing the biggest gains over the past three decades. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Latest European Union figures released this month show the average life expectancy across the bloc in 2023 was 81.5 years, almost a year's gain over 2022 as the coronavirus pandemic was coming to an end. Jennifer Beam-Dowd is a professor of demography and population health at the University of Oxford.
Within Europe, we're seeing really high life expectancy in countries like Spain and Italy, Sweden, Norway. But some countries are falling behind their peers, and that includes the UK. And then Eastern Europe has made a lot of progress since the post-Soviet mortality crisis of the 90s, but they're still lagging behind a bit.
A recent study in the Lancet journal showed that globally, life expectancy increased by 6.2 years between 1990 and 2021, with Eastern Sub-Saharan Africa experiencing the largest increase of some 10.7 years. Again, Jennifer Beam-Dowd.
I think that's really good news and reflects a lot of continued progress all over the world in falls in infectious disease and infant and child mortality, which makes a big difference to life expectancy because you're saving a lot of years of life if you save lives at young ages.
Figures released in March showed average life expectancy in the United States in 2022, the most recent data available, was 77.5 years, still more than a year lower than the life expectancy before the pandemic. Figures for 2023 have not yet been released. Again, Jennifer Beam Dowd.
A lot of countries have bounced back close to pre-pandemic life expectancy, but some countries, such as the U.S., have not returned yet to the levels they were at in 2019. But another thing that's having a big impact, we think, right now is the obesity epidemic, which started taking off, especially in the U.S. in the early 1980s. And in fact, we are seeing major slowdowns and improvements from cardiovascular disease that are driving a lot of the stalling life expectancy in high-income countries.
The European Principality of Monaco, a favorite home for the super rich, had the world's highest life expectancy in 2023 at almost 90 years, according to U.S. figures. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Cameroon is observing World Menstrual Hygiene Day today, with health representatives visiting schools and public spaces to educate people to end social taboos that women should not be seen in public during their menstrual periods. Organizations are also donating menstrual kits to girls displaced by terrorism and political tensions in the Central African state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Scores of youths, a majority of them girls, are told that menstruation is a natural part of the reproductive cycle. Officials in Cameroon's social affairs and health ministries say the monthly flows are not a curse, and girls and women should never be isolated from markets, schools, churches, and other public places because of their menstrual cycle. The government of the Central African State says it invited boys to Menstrual Health Day activities because boys often mock girls in schools when they see blood dripping on their legs or skirts. Tabe Edwan is the spokesperson of Haven of Rebirth Cameroon, an association that takes care of victims of sexual and gender-based violence. She says she participates in activities to mark World Menstrual Health Day to battle taboos about menstruation that persist in Cameroon.
We are looking at instances of stigmatization such as prohibition from cooking, prohibition from attending religious ceremonies or visiting such spaces. Most often a young girl who is having her menstrual flow is considered to be unclean, and so anything that she touches becomes unclean or it also becomes contaminated.
Cameroon's government says World Menstrual Day activities took place in many towns and villages, especially in the northwest and southwest regions, where a separatist conflict, now in its seventh year, has displaced about 750,000 people. The country's social affairs ministry says displaced women and girls have lost nearly everything and lack even the $2 needed to buy sanitary pads each time they are on their monthly cycle. Mirabel Sonke is founder of the Network of Solidarity, Hope and Empowerment, a founding member of the International Menstrual Hygiene Coalition. Sonke says she is disheartened when women and girls use rags, papers and tree leaves, or just anything unhealthy to stop blood flow because they cannot afford sanitary pads.
We usually give about 1,000 dignity kits, which include buckets, soap, pants, and a reusable, washable menstrual pad. We're still advocating for pads to be free. Our mission is to have an environment where pads will be accessible. That's why we are opening pad banks now, where vulnerable women and girls can go there and have pads.
Sonke pleaded with donors to provide sanitary pads to give to several thousand northern Cameroonian girls and women displaced by Boko Haram terrorism. Cameroon's government says 70% of menstruating women and girls lack access to regular basic sanitation products, but it has not reacted to pleas from NGOs to distribute sanitary pads free of charge. The Central African States officials say families and communities should help put an end to stigmas by openly discussing menstrual flow and letting everyone know that menstruation is a normal and natural biological function. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both campaigning for the support of black voters. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how the presidential campaigns are targeting African Americans.
Donald Trump told voters in New York that all Americans will benefit if he's elected.
It doesn't matter whether you're black or brown or white or whatever the hell color you are. It doesn't matter. We are all Americans, and we're going to pull together as Americans.
Joe Biden told civil rights leaders in Michigan that all Americans are represented in his cabinet.
We have more African Americans. We have more women. We have more minorities in our administration than any other administration in all of history. That's why we're doing so damn well.
Trump and Biden are both campaigning for the support of black voters in an election where that may make the difference in swing states that could decide the outcome. Pew Research data shows the top electoral issues for black Americans in 2024 are improving education and strengthening the economy. Trump says he'll tackle both.
We're going to bring success back to our schools. We're going to bring prosperity back to every neighborhood and every borough of the greatest city in our land.
The Biden campaign's targeting black voters with this ad about Trump in New York.
Of course I hate these people.
Donald Trump disrespecting black folk is nothing new. He was sued for refusing to rent his apartments to black families and called for the execution of five innocent black and brown teenagers.
Biden says Trump is a vengeful candidate whose election would hurt minorities.
Trump isn't running to lead America. He's running for revenge. But revenge is no way to lead a country. You can't build a future on revenge. You can't build better lives through revenge. That's why I'm running to lead America into the future.
Immigration is a central theme in Trump's campaign, one he tailored to minority voters in the South Bronx.
African Americans are getting slaughtered. Hispanic Americans are getting slaughtered. And these millions and millions of people that are coming into our country, the biggest impact and the biggest negative impact is against our black population and our Hispanic population, who are losing their jobs, losing their housing, losing everything they can lose.
Biden told black voters he needs them again to beat Trump.
You're the reason Donald Trump is the defeated former president. And you're the reason Donald Trump's going to be a loser again.
4 years ago, black voters chose Biden over Trump by 92%. As of last month, Pew Research data says that's down to 77% of black voters who would vote for or are leaning toward Biden, compared to 18% for Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Former Burundian Prime Minister Alain Goulamy Bonyoni has appeared in Burundi's Supreme Court to appeal his conviction on charges that include attempting to overthrow the government. Bonyoni was prime minister from mid-2020 until September 2022 when he was fired, days after President Evariste Ndayishimiye warned of an alleged coup plot against him. He was sentenced in December to life in prison on a raft of charges, including plotting to topple the constitutional government, as well as using witchcraft to threaten the president's life, undermining national security, and destabilizing the economy. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.